Chapter 40. "Choose your weapons," Pitt shouted over the banshee cry of the alarm as he kicked open the door. Sandecker needed no urging. He was out of the jeep and ransacking the cabinet for ammunition while clutching the flashlight under his arm. "What's your pleasure, gentlemen?" he yelled out. Pitt snatched a pair of Colt Combat Commander automatic pistols, one with blue finish, the other in stainless steel. He ejected the clips. 45 automatic. Sandecker fumbled through the boxes in the cabinet for only a few seconds before he spotted the right caliber. He tossed two boxes to Pitt. Winchester silver tips. Then he turned to Giordino. "What do you need, Al?" Giordino had pulled three Remington 1100 shotguns off the rack. 12-gauge, double-aught load. "Sorry," Sandecker snapped back. He handed Giordino several boxes of shotgun casings. "Number 4 Magnum buckshot is the best I can do on short notice." Then he crouched low and dashed over to the paint department. "Hurry and douse your light," Pitt warned him, smashing the remaining headlight with the butt of one Colt. The vans had slammed to a stop up the block and out of sight of the men inside the store. The assassins flowed from the vehicles in their black ninja suits swiftly and smoothly. They did not rush toward the hardware store, but paused, taking their time. Their rehearsed tactical operation to riddle the jeep and its occupants to shreds had been fouled by Pitt's unexpected dive from the beltway into Phelps Point. Now they were forced to formulate a new tactical operation on the spot. Coolly, they sized up the situation. Overconfidence clouded their judgment. Because they had experienced no return fire from the three men in the fleeing four-wheel drive, and were certain their intended victims were unarmed, they were over-anxious to rush through the storefront and finish the job. Their team leader was wise enough to gesture for caution. He stood in a doorway across the street and peered into the darkness inside the wrecked hardware store. He could see nothing beyond the debris, as evidenced by the glow from a solitary streetlight. The jeep was lost in the shadows. Nor could he hear sounds from the interior over the annoying wail from the alarm. His analysis of the situation was rushed as lights blinked on in apartments above several of the stores. He could not afford to attract a crowd of witnesses. Then there was the local law enforcement agency. He could expect the sheriff and his deputies to charge on the scene within minutes. Then he allowed a misjudgment to guide him into a fatal error. He wrongly assumed the men in the jeep were badly injured in the crash or cowering in fear, and he failed to send a team of his men around to seal off the rear of the store. He allowed 3 minutes to rush the jeep, finish off his prey, and retreat in the vans. The kill should be quick and easy, he thought. As a precaution, he shot out the streetlight, plunging the street into blackness and preventing his men from being outlined when they made the assault. He held a whistle to his lips and gave the signal to prepare weapons and ensure that the selector switches were off safe on their 5.56mm 51-round Sawa automatic rifles. Then he blew three short chirps, and they began to move in. They glided swiftly through the gloom like water moccasins in a Georgia bayou, slipping through the shattered display window in pairs and quickly fading into the shadows. The first 6 men to enter froze in position, muzzles extended and sweeping back and forth, their eyes straining to pierce the blackness. Then suddenly a 5-gallon can of paint thinner with a burning cloth wick in its spout sailed between them and fell on the sidewalk, exploding in a maelstrom of blue and orange flame. In unison, Pitt and Giordino opened up as Sandecker hurled another can of the volatile fluid. Pitt worked the Colts in both hands, pointing but not taking careful aim. He laid down a barrage that dropped the 3 men who were crouched to the right of the window almost before they realized they'd been hit. One of them had time to let off a short burst that smashed into a row of paint cans, leaving colored spurts of enamel gushing onto the shambles of merchandise broken and trashed on the floor. Giordino blew the first man on the left back through the window and half into the street. The other two were only shadows in the darkness, but he blasted away at them until one Remington went empty. Then he dropped it and picked up another he'd preloaded and fired again and again until all return fire had ceased. Pitt reloaded his cartridge clips by feel as he stared through the flame and smoke that swirled around the front of the store. The killers in the black ninja outfits had vanished completely, frantically seeking cover or lying in the gutter behind the thankful protection of a high curb. But they hadn't run away. They were still out there, still as dangerous as ever. Pitt knew they were stunned, but mad as hornets now. They would regroup and come again, but more shrewdly, more cautiously. And next time they could see. The interior of the hardware store was brightly illuminated by the flames that had attacked the wooden storefront. The entire building and the men in it were only minutes away from becoming ashes. "Admiral?" Pitt shouted. "Over here," answered Sandecker, "in the paint department." "We've overstayed our visit. Can you find a back door while Al and I hold the fort?" "On my way." You okay, pal? Giordino waved to Remington. No new holds. Time to go. We still have a plane to catch. I hear you. Pitt took a final look at the huddled corpses of strangers he had killed. He reached down and pulled off the hood from one of the dead. Under the light of the flames, he could see a face with Asian features. A rage began to seethe within him. The name Hideki Suma flooded his mind. A man he'd never met, had no idea of what he looked like. But the thought that Suma represented slime and evil was enough to prevent Pitt from feeling any remorse for the men he'd killed. There was a calculated determination in him that the man responsible for the death and chaos must also die. "Through the lumber section," Sandecker suddenly shouted. "There's a door leading to the loading dock." Pitt grabbed Giordino by the arm and pushed his friend ahead of him. "You first. I'll cover." Clutching one of the Remingtons, Giordino slipped between the shelves and was gone. Pitt turned and opened up one last time with the Colts, squeezing the triggers so hard and fast they fired off like machine guns. And then the automatics were empty, dead in his hands. He quickly decided to keep them and pay later. He stuffed them in his belt and ran for the door. He almost made it. The team leader of the assassins, more cautious than ever after losing six men, threw a pair of stun grenades in the now blazing store, followed by a sleet of gunfire that sent lead splattering all around Pitt. Then the grenades went off in a crushing detonation that tore the ravaged heart out of what was left of Oscar Brown's hardware emporium. The shock waves brought down the roof in a shower of sparks as the thunderous roar rattled every window in Phelps Point before rumbling out into the countryside. All that remained was a fiery cauldron in the shell left by the still-standing brick walls. The blast caught Pitt from behind and flung him through the rear door, over the loading dock, and into an alley behind the store. He landed on his back, knocking the wind out of his lungs. He was lying there gasping, trying to regain his breath, when Giordino and Sandecker hoisted him to his feet and helped him stagger through the backyard of an adjoining house into the temporary safety of a park bandstand across the next street. The security alarm had gone dead when the electrical wires burned, and now they could hear sirens approaching as the sheriff and the volunteer fire department raced toward the flames. Giordino had a talent for getting in the last word, and he rose to the occasion as the three of them lay there under the roof of the bandstand, exhausted, bruised, and just plain thankful to be alive. "Do you suppose," he wondered dryly, staring absently at the fire lighting the dawn sky, "it was something we said?"